all this. So it's Jimmy Benedetti, and I'm recording my grandma. What's your name?
Claire Clark.
Okay. When were you born, and where were you born?
I was born in Glendale, California, which is Southern California, 1947. So I'm a baby boom, what they call a baby boomer. Mm-hmm. There was like a big increase in the birth rate after World War II, mm-hmm. when all the men came home.
Yep.
So I'm a baby boomer.
Very nice. So what were your parents' names and what were they like?
My father was Alex Rudroff. My mom was Pauline Price. My dad was born and raised on a farm in Missouri in a very small town. My mom grew up in Oklahoma. My mom's story is kind of interesting because her family's story is kind of a Dust Bowl story, Grapes of Wrath and all that. They moved from Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl years out to the Central Valley of California and then stayed there. So, and then my dad, having grown up in Missouri on the farm, when he was in his mid to late 20s, he and a brother decided to go out to California to see what they could do out there. So they actually ended up in basically the same area where my mom was living. And they were working in the fields, my dad and his brother, just to earn money. Mm-hmm. And subsequent to that, my mom and dad met, and then they were married in 1939, and then left the Central Valley of California and moved to Glendale, which is right outside Los Angeles.
Got it. So your dad was not in World War II?
My father was not in World War II. However, he was working for Lockheed in Burbank during World War II, and he actually helped build the P-38 planes that were used in World War II. But you know that because you have a picture of that.
Yep. So what were their jobs?
That my dad was an aircraft mechanic, mm-hmm. and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And then later on, after me and my siblings were born, she would do babysitting. She also worked down kind of as lunch lady at the local public school. So odds and ends that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have any siblings?
I do. I have an older sister, Mary. I have had a younger sister, Linda. Unfortunately, she passed away from breast cancer. And I have a younger brother, Jim. So there were four of us, pretty well spread out. There's actually 17 years between Mary, mm-hmm. and Jim. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a big spread.
Mm-hmm. And then you were right in the middle.
Yeah, I'm the middle child.
So what was your relationship like? Were you really close or kind of more?
With my siblings?
Yes, with your siblings.
Not growing up. I think because of the age difference. I think I was closest to Linda. There were only 4 years difference between Linda and I. But there was quite an age difference between me and Mary, my older sister, and then, of course, with Jim, my brother. I can't really say we were close growing up, mm-hmm. but as you get older, age, those 17 years really don't make a difference, mm-hmm. and we're very close now.
Got it. So kind of just maybe describe your childhood a little bit, just things you enjoyed when you were younger and just how it was growing up.
My parents were pretty strict, but I do remember they had a lot of friends. We were friends with a lot of different families, and we would go on picnics, and we would go to the beach. We would have parties. So there were, we were always having a lot of fun, but when it came to school, they were strict. Mm-hmm. when it came to going to church. They were strict. So I can't say my parents were, I know they loved us, but they really weren't, maybe it was just the times also, they really weren't very demonstrative about their love for us.
Yeah.
But I know they did love us.
And you said they were strict about school. Were you a good student?
I was a good student.
Got it. Do you have any stories from when you were younger? Just funny stories or just anything?
Oh, gosh. But the only thing I can think of, my dad then ended up being the only one from his family that lived in California. The rest were still in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
So not often, but occasionally, we would pack up the car and travel cross country to Missouri to visit the relatives. So that was quite an undertaking, especially in those days.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my dad had an old Ford, and you were always worried about the car overheating. So people had these big canvas bags filled with water that they would hang off the front of their car, and then if the car started overheating, you would, you know, lift the hood up and use that water like to cool down the engine. So those trips to Missouri and back were always adventurous.
And then did you stay long when you went there, or was it just for a couple days?
We would usually stay probably about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Because there were lots of relatives there. There were relatives that still lived in Rich Fountain, which was a small town where my dad was born and grew up. And then he also had relatives in St. Louis. So we would spend some time on the farm, which was always fun because they didn't have indoor plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a pump outside in the yard where you would get water.
Mm-hmm.
And to take a bath, they would fill up this big tin tub.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't take a bath every day that way. So it was always so different than the way, you know, that we lived at home in California.
Got it. So kind of going ahead to events besides the backstory, starting with Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
The TV debate was the first presidential debate that was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And did you watch it on TV at home?
We did watch it on TV at home. I was pretty young. I guess I must have been like eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I remember about it, of course, I don't remember what was discussed, what the questions were that they had to answer, Kennedy and then Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were Democrats, so of course I was for Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember Kennedy seemed very young, which he was.
Yeah.
He was 43 when he was elected president. Seemed very young, seemed very at ease in front of the camera, whereas Nixon seemed very nervous. They talk now about Nixon just sweating bullets. That I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that he was perspiring so much on his face. But I do remember that he just did not seem as at ease being in front of the camera and answering the questions.
Mm-hmm. So being the first debate that was on TV, did your parents, how did they react to it, if you remember?
I don't remember how my parents reacted to it. I mean, they were going to vote for Kennedy, you know. Now, it was, besides the debate that was on TV, like I said, I was in eighth grade. We had a presidential debate in our classroom.
Mm-hmm.
We had several people on the Kennedy side, of which I myself was one of them, and several people on the Nixon side. And I can remember thinking, how can anybody ever want to vote for Nixon? You know, Kennedy was very young, and you would think that would be like a bit controversial. But I can remember the big controversial thing when Kennedy was running for president was the fact that he was Catholic. There had never been a Catholic president before. And these conspiracy theories were going around that if he was elected president, he was going to defer all matters to the Pope, mm-hmm. which was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, from just your community where you lived and your parents, were most people siding with Kennedy, or was it kind of a mix?
I don't know. I was too young, I think, to be aware of that. But my guess is it was pretty much of a mix.
Okay. So next thing, what do you remember about when President Kennedy was inaugurated?
It was so exciting, and it was just so different than President Eisenhower and his wife Mamie. Here was this young couple, glamorous couple, really, with two very young children. They just seem very glamorous and very, very fascinating. And Kennedy, John Kennedy, came from a very large, well-established, wealthy family from Boston. And he had lots of brothers and sisters, and then there were spouses of the brothers and sisters, and then children. And it seemed like you got to know all of them, and they just seemed rather, to me at the time, they just seemed rather movie starish. Mm-hmm. It was that glamorous.
So looking back on it now, do you kind of think that kind of being them kind of looked at as like royalty almost with their big family?
That's a great way of putting it, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do you think that helped have people support them?
I think it did. Unfortunately, he never got to run for a second term, but my guess is he probably would have been reelected. And I think he would have been, looking back, it's hard to say how much he really accomplished in the couple of years that he was president. But I think given more time, he would have done good things for the country.
Okay. And then he did have a short-lived presidency as he was assassinated. So just what do you remember about the assassination?
I was exactly your age. I was a junior in high school, mm-hmm. and I was in chemistry class. You know, it's one of those events that you're going to remember exactly where you were and what mm-hmm. you were doing. I was in chemistry, and suddenly the intercom came on, but it was like all staticky. I mean, we were kind of looking at each other like, you know, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. And then after a few minutes, we couldn't understand what was being said. The principal came on and said that Kennedy had been shot. I don't remember if she said right at that time that he had been killed. I think maybe it hadn't been announced yet that he had actually died, but that he had been shot. It was just absolutely, positively unbelievable, mm-hmm. and so devastating. And the next couple of days, and you know, leading up to his funeral, and then the day of the funeral, people were just absolutely glued to the TV mm-hmm. For anything that they could, you know, follow and see. And the day of his funeral, I remember they had his casket like on an open wagon being pulled, and a horse was next to it without a rider, and the boots were like backwards. Mm-hmm. That's what they do, you know. Mm-hmm. And I can remember this drumming, you know, this kind of just dirge like drumming. And I can still hear that drumming today if mm-hmm. I think about it.
So you did watch the funeral on TV?
I did. Okay. Absolutely. I was like everyone else, absolutely mm-hmm. positively glued to the TV to see Mrs. Kennedy and his children and his brothers and sisters. And it was just so, so sad. So sad. But you know, it's interesting. Every year when anniversaries anniversary of his assassination comes around, a lot of times they'll play the video. Have you ever seen the video of the actual assassination? Where he's riding in the limousine, open air limousine.
Oh, we just watched a video in class, not of the actual assassination, just kind of like the path he took and where like the shooter was and just kind of like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've seen that video, you know, so many times, and I have the strangest reaction to it when I watch it. Mm-hmm. As I'm watching it and I'm seeing the car, you know, rolling down the street mm-hmm. and people on the sides, you know, cheering. Mm-hmm. And for a minute, it occurs to me, maybe it won't happen this time. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he won't be shot. Isn't that a strange reaction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I actually know, mm-hmm. it's like I want a different outcome. You know, like just kind of holding my breath, watching the car come down, mm-hmm. hoping that he's not going to be shot.
Mm-hmm. And then...
strange.
Was it televised when he did get shot?
His visit to Dallas, there's a lot of like news video. The video of the actual assassination where you see him slump over and Jackie Kennedy kind of climb out on the back of the limousine to help one of the Secret Service up. I'm not sure if that's news video or if someone was taking video, like a person that was just on the side taking video.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but it's been played time mm-hmm. and time and time again.
Mm-hmm. And then after the assassination, just in the following days too, could you definitely tell that everyone's morale was kind of down and it was just a really like moving situation?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was just so unbelievable, but mm-hmm. yep. it happened.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously during this time, the Soviet Union was a big concern, as we didn't know what they were going to do, especially with the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. So I know that especially in like schools, they kind of had like nuclear drills just in case something did happen. So was there anything maybe in your place of work or that you had to like precautions that you had to follow?
I don't remember anything at school that we had to do. It seemed like even before the Cuban Missile Crisis, maybe like even in the 50s, we would do like drills, like if there was a bomb or whatever, like we would go under our desk, mm-hmm. like that was going to save us, yeah. you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But anything specific during the Cuban Missile Crisis? No. I was in high school at that time. I was a freshman, and there was a show on TV called Dick Clark's American Bandstand. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It was this show that came out of Philadelphia, and it was basically Dick Clark was like the MC, mm-hmm. and he would play the popular songs of the day, mm-hmm. and kids would dance, and we would watch them dance, and then a new song would come on, and then he'd have groups on to perform their, you know, hit songs mm-hmm. and stuff. So I used to come home every day, and of course, I think it was on like at 4 o'clock, come home from school and look forward to watching American Bandstand. But during the missile crisis, it seemed like it always got bumped for like a special news conference or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I can remember feeling very tense. I mean, it was really brought home to us mm-hmm. how serious this was, that mm-hmm. the Russians were moving nuclear weapons into Cuba. Mm-hmm. And it was like a standoff. It was kind of like, you know, gunslingers at the OK Corral, you know, mm-hmm. Khrushchev, who was the head of Russia, and Kennedy, who, you know, was the head of the United States, facing off. And it's like, who was going to blink first, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And thank God the Soviet Union or Russians mm-hmm. Did, and they did remove the missiles.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember it. The thing I remember most from is just how tense it was, like mm-hmm. what was going to happen.
So was it just constantly on the news of just like the mm-hmm. Soviets and mm-hmm. just there, were they really portrayed as like this terrible threat to our
democracy. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because Fidel Castro was had gained control of Cuba, yeah.
mm-hmm.
and he was, you know, it was a communist government, and mm-hmm. of course Soviet Union was mm-hmm. communist, and Cuba's 90 miles off the coast of
yeah.
Florida, mm-hmm. you know, so yeah, it was seen as a very big threat. These nuclear missiles were 90 miles away
mm-hmm.
from our country.
In addition to that, like the space race between us and the Soviet Union, I know that they did put, the Soviets put the first man into orbit,
mm-hmm.
but and we got to the moon first, but mm-hmm. when they got the first person into orbit, did it like strike any concerns that they were ahead of us, or we were kind of falling behind to them?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because initially they were putting dogs up in space, and we were putting dogs up in space mm-hmm. as well. And then they did. You're absolutely right. Was it Alexei Gagarin? I'm not sure about the name. I think that was their first man up in space.
Mm-hmm.
So Alan Shepard was our first man that we put up.
Mm-hmm.
But it was up. He didn't go into orbit.
Mm-hmm.
It was just up and then back down.
Okay.
And then John Glenn, the second man we put into space, went into to orbit. I think he orbited at least once
mm-hmm. yeah.
around the world. But that's a very, the whole space race and, you know, the missile launchings is actually a very special memory for me. The launches were all made from Florida, Cape Canaveral,
mm-hmm.
which now has been renamed to Cape Kennedy, Kennedy Space Center, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were always very early morning launches in Florida. Well, there's 3 hours time difference between Florida and California.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was always interested in it and rather mesmerized just by the power of it. So, and my dad was too. So it would only be my dad and I up very early.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, what was it? 3-4 o'clock in the morning, something
oh, wow.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
To watch the rockets take off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice memory that I have with my dad that we were able to share that.
Mm-hmm. And then I assume you and him also watched the first, when we landed on the moon landing.
Yeah, by that time I was in Chicago at Mundelein College, and I can remember we were in, you know, one of the places that we could gather. A bunch of us were in there watching it on TV. Very, well, black and white, of course, very grainy, very hard to make out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very exciting. And even before the moon landing, the mission that went up just before that and went around the moon,
mm-hmm.
as they go to the backside of the moon, they would lose transmission with them.
Mm-hmm.
So all the time that they were going around the back, so you just hope that when they came back here, you were going to be able to reestablish, you know, communication with
mm-hmm.
them. And then when it was the moon landing, I mean, it was so tense and you know, with it landing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came time to unland and
mm-hmm.
to go back and rendezvous with their spaceship,
mm-hmm.
very, very tense, but absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. So the atmosphere, just the emotions you had and everything, it was just kind of the anticipation of wanting for them to make it. And
yes, so exciting, and hoping for their safety and hoping that the mission was successful. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. And I know now that there's a lot of conspiracies on whether they actually
yeah.
did that or not. So did they have any conspiracies like that back then, that it was real or not?
I don't remember it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, subsequently, like you say, you know, there is.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't remember anything like that at the time.
Mm-hmm. So kind of going backtracking to right after Kennedy was assassinated, President Johnson took office. So what were your opinions on him, and what did you kind of think about the whole situation?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I think I was a little resentful of him through nothing that he did. I mean, it wasn't his fault that Kennedy was assassinated and he took over the presidency, but I think I was a bit resentful. Mm-hmm. However, I feel in retrospect, looking back on it, I feel he was a very good president. Mm-hmm. He had quite an agenda, or a plan that he called the Great Society. Mm-hmm. And within that plan, he passed the Civil Rights Act. He passed the Voting Rights Act, which were two major legislations which addressed poverty in the United States, racial injustice in the United States, and he also proposed, and then the Congress passed, I should say, legislation on protecting the environment. Mm-hmm. What I didn't like about him was, and it wasn't, well, he was president, so I have to say he was responsible for it, the escalation in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. We also kind of learned in class that he was very different from Kennedy and kind of the way he spoke and things like that, because he was from the South, and he used like some like questionable language sometimes. So do you think that made your opinion change on him during that time?
Yes, where the Kennedys were young and glamorous, the Johnsons did not seem young and glamorous. And as you say, the language he would use sometime, and I can remember one time he had an appendectomy? He showed his appendectomy scar to the to the news guys, and of course, you know, they took pictures of that. Mm-hmm. You were right. He was a Southern Democrat. He was from Texas. Mm-hmm. And Kennedy was not, Kennedy nor any of the Kennedy family were particularly fond of Johnson. Mm-hmm. He was really brought on to, when Kennedy was running for president, he was brought on as the vice presidential candidate, mm-hmm. to get the Southern vote. Mm-hmm. Kennedy was very Boston, Northeast, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
Harvard, all that. Mm-hmm. He needed the Southern vote. And that's really why Johnson was brought on board, mm-hmm. on board to the ticket.
And then you said and kind of talked about the Vietnam War a little bit. So what do you remember about the draft lottery?
The draft lottery was televised. Mm-hmm. I believe they had two draft lotteries. First one, I don't know, 68, 69. Anyway, it was on TV. And it was interesting because I looked this up in preparation for this. Mm-hmm. So it was picked by birthdays. Mm-hmm. So actually September 14th was number one. Mm-hmm. So the lower number you had was not good. Mm-hmm. That would be like you were the first ones to be drafted.
Yeah.
So I checked out your birthday out of curiosity, and you were number 33. Mm-hmm. So you also would have had a high number, 33 out of 365 days in mm-hmm. the year.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's kind of scary. Mm-hmm. Vietnam was an extremely polarizing war. And it seemed to me that it was the young against the war and the old for the war. Mm-hmm. And we were told that we were fighting this war because of the quote-unquote domino effect. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of the domino effect?
Yeah, I have. Just if one country gets taken to communism, it just keeps continuing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's why we were there. There was very strong opposition to the war from the college-aged, of course, of which I was part at that time. Mm-hmm. And of course it was our generation, mm-hmm. that was being sent to mm-hmm. to fight the war.
So you said it's kind of like the young was against it and the old, so it's kind of just like the people who wouldn't have to fight were for it and the mm-hmm. people that...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then since there was a large opposition to the war, were there like any rallies that you participated in or any that stood out that you remember?
Back to the draft for... can we go back to the draft yeah. for just a minute? I have two cousins from Missouri, mm-hmm. on my cousins on my dad's side, that and they were both Marines, and they both fought in Vietnam. They weren't drafted. They had volunteered. Luckily, they both came back. They were not killed there, as so many others were,
mm-hmm.
needlessly, uselessly, I feel. But one of my cousins still to this day has medical issues just from his time fighting in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Like PTSD issues or actual, like more physical?
Physical.
Okay.
Physical issues. There were numerous and serious demonstrations against the war, some of which turned violent.
Mm-hmm.
In Ohio, Kent State, there were 4 students killed by the National Guard during a demonstration against the war. I was at Mundelein College at this time. And I can remember attending 2 different rallies at Loyola University, which is right next door to Mundelein College, against chemical companies.
Mm-hmm.
Dow Chemical was the company that was manufacturing napalm.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of napalm?
Yeah. Why don't they drop it on the trees and it would take all that up?
Well, no, that was Agent Orange.
Oh, Agent Orange.
Napalm was a sticky burning gel that they would drop onto villages. I mean, it would burn buildings, it would burn people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monsanto was the chemical company who was manufacturing Agent Orange. Agent Orange was the defoliant.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam, most of it is jungle.
Yeah.
So they would, you know, use this defoliant so that it would be easier to find the enemy. And to this day, many Vietnam veterans have lingering medical issues because of their exposure to Agent Orange.
So what was the extent to which the population or just the American people like knew about what was going on? Was it kind of hidden a little bit, or was everything kind of broadcasted?
You know, it was broadcast. I don't know if we were getting all of the information, but every night you would turn on the national news and there would be footage from Vietnam with reports as to what was happening and the death toll every night of how many more American soldiers had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
It was a terrible, terrible time, a terrible war. I felt we had no reason to be there. And then when we finally did have to withdraw, I mean, we really lost the war.
Yeah.
The North Vietnamese then came and took over. It was a mess as we, you know, were withdrawing and people were trying to get out. But besides the rallies that I talk about, I can remember late in the war, we started bombing even Cambodia,
mm-hmm.
because the government believed that the North Vietnamese were using routes in Cambodia, which was neighboring to Vietnam, to bring supplies to the North Vietnamese troops. So they started bombing Cambodia, which we wore black armbands at school, not that that's going to do any good,
yeah.
but protesting the bombing in Cambodia. Many Cambodian civilians lost their lives from that.
Mm-hmm. And then just with like the news stations on TV, could you tell that some were pro-war and anti-war, or was it kind of just broadcasting what was going on?
Oh, that's a good point that you bring up. Because today, watching a news on one station or another, they mm-hmm. definitely have a bias, yeah. wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would.
At that time, at least the way I remember it, is that it was just presented. Mm-hmm. There was no editorializing like on the national news. There was mm-hmm. still editorializing like in newspapers and yeah. stuff, or Newsweek magazine or whatever. But no, it was just the facts were just presented.
Got it.
Which is pretty different than what we see today.
Definitely. Yeah. So kind of going into talking about protests and boycotts, can you talk a little about the Cesar Chavez Great Boycott?
Yes. The very first I knew about Cesar Chavez was my mother stopped buying grapes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I think I was a senior in high school. Mom, why aren't you buying grapes? Well, because there's a grape boycott. So Cesar Chavez came from a family. He was born in the United States. His family was a family of farm workers. Mm-hmm. And at one time they were migrant farm workers, meaning, I'm sure you know, they traveled around different mm-hmm. areas. This is in California. California is a huge agricultural state. Mm-hmm. A lot of farm workers. Mm-hmm. And Cesar Chavez took it upon himself with help from others to try to unionize the farm workers to help with their pay, to increase their pay, and also their working conditions. Mm-hmm. And he eventually was successful, but there were boycotts on grapes, boycotts on lettuce, boycotts on different food products. And then he also went on hunger strikes. Mm-hmm. And there were doctors that would tend to him, you know, when he was on these hunger strikes. And there were also people that were raising money for him. Mm-hmm. And when I was still in California, I belonged to this choral group, and we were invited once to go to this, I'm going to call it a cocktail party. Mm-hmm. It was a cocktail party in the San Jose area to raise money for mm-hmm. Cesar Chavez. So we went and we sang a few songs, and mm-hmm. was in this beautiful home up in the hills, and you know, but it was a fundraiser for Cesar Chavez. So he was able to accomplish quite a feat by mm-hmm. organizing and unionizing the farm workers.
So I'll kind of go continuing from that. Were there any other causes that you kind of joined into, such as not buying grapes or things like that?
Well, when I was in Northern California, that was the time that the hippies had kind of invaded an area of San Francisco called Haight-Ashbury. Do you remember we visited Haight-Ashbury when we were there in San Francisco? No?
I don't think so.
And there were doctors in the area that set up a free clinic for the hippies to deal with any medical issues that they had. Overdoses, mm-hmm. you know, all that type of thing. So, and they also used to do fundraising. So to add a little color to this interview, mm-hmm. I attended a concert in October 1967, which was a fundraiser for the free clinic in Haight-Ashbury. Mm-hmm. 7,500 young people paid to come to this outdoor concert in the San Jose Fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. They paid a whopping $2 a ticket.
Wow.
To attend the concert. And even the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club showed up. Mm-hmm. And I heard that they paid extra at the gate to be let in. Mm-hmm. And then also because it was one of their leaders' birthday and they didn't want any trouble. So mm-hmm. they just kind of stuck in one section of the fairground to mm-hmm. themselves. But what was interesting, little did I know at the time that I was there, there were a number of bands, a number of acts that performed. One of the acts was Big Brother and the Holding Company, which probably doesn't ring a bell with too many people, mm-hmm. but their lead singer probably rings a bell. Their lead singer was Janis Joplin.
Still don't know who that is.
Well, Janis Joplin, very unfortunately, died very young, mm-hmm. drugs and alcohol. But she remains one of my favorite singers of all time. She had a very gravelly voice. She mm-hmm. was outlandish, but boy, could she sing.
Got it. So going into the end of the interview, how did these events kind of shape you as a person, or did you have any takeaways from any of these moments that you still carry with you?
You know, I felt that I grew up a little sheltered in Glendale, you know, growing up. Mm-hmm. But then once I left home and went to college, first up in Northern California and then eventually in Chicago, it really opened my mind as to all the different types of people that are out there, all different kinds of situations, problems that we had in our country, good things that we had going on in our country. The 60s, that decade, was really a time of change, huge change. From the 50s. The 50s were very, well, I think of them as being very straight-laced, very regimented, and the 60s, we kind of blew the lid off. Mm-hmm. Lots of good in the 60s, plenty of bad, mm-hmm. many assassinations. But I will say that the 60s probably has one of the greatest soundtracks. Got the Beatles, Bob Dylan, the Stones, mm-hmm. Beach Boys, Jimi Hendrix, Motown, mm-hmm. folk music, Joan Baez, Joni mm-hmm. Mitchell, jazz. And to me, the 60s is a soundtrack. It's just the music of the 60s was so intricately involved in what was going on, mm-hmm. both socially and with the war mm-hmm. and the changes.
Yeah, weren't there a lot of songs based on like anti-Vietnam
war? A lot of protest songs, right, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And then just final question, looking back, is there anything you would want to be involved in or maybe not have been involved in, just anything that you would change?
Oh, that's a good question. I wish I had been more active in civil rights. Mm-hmm. I guess I didn't have the opportunity to, or didn't seek out the opportunity to do that. I certainly was behind civil rights. Mm-hmm. I think they're threatened today, which bothers me. But yeah, I think that's the only change I would make.
Very nice. Well, thank you for the interview.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.